It's the most anticipated WNBA season in history.
And you know what that means.
Court is back in session.
Welcome to Queens of the Court, an Odyssey original podcast.
I'm your girl, Cheryl Swoops.
And I'm Jordan Robinson. All WNBA season long, we'll be bringing you interviews with star athletes, analysis on your favorite teams,
and lots of hot takes.
Order, order in the court.
Follow and listen to Queens of the Court on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Brandon Tierney, Sal Licata back on the Fan. Time here with the crown topic of the day. We started the show a couple hours ago talking about Aaron Rodgers and whether he should or should not play in the preseason game. Here we got Jets, Giants, looking forward to it coming up on Saturday. That's the one game, if any, that you take any stock in or at least pay attention to, you know, for the most part. You don't have to watch the entire game, but you pay attention to it. And not only do we think, or what we think of Rodgers, whether he should play or shouldn't play, BT, which I think that the Jets need to hold. If it's me, I don't want Aaron Rodgers to play. I cannot go into that game and have anything happen. I don't care if you're playing for a snap. I don't want anything happening to Aaron Rodgers. It's not worth it. Let him. He's 40 years old. He's experienced. He doesn't need the reps. I don't believe Rodgers needs to get hit or get the feel of the real game speed. He's had plenty of practice here. You know, the scrimmages, whatever you want to say. I'm fine with letting him just unveil it opening night in San Francisco on Monday Night Football. But then the other part of it is, what do each individual want here? What does Robert Saleh want to happen with Aaron Rodgers? Does he want Rodgers to play or doesn't he? Does Aaron Rodgers himself want to play or doesn't he? And I think that's where we get to an interesting spot where if Robert Saleh does not want Aaron Rodgers to play, he shouldn't play. End of story. I don't care if Rodgers wants to go out there and play. If Robert Saleh, the head coach, says, Aaron, we love you. I appreciate your willingness to get out there and take some hits and want to go out there. I don't want you to play. End of story. That should be the end of story. Where with the Jets, we don't know what the hell's going on.
Well, and that's a big part of it here. To me, I'm turned off by what appears to be a lack of a definitive plan. You know, I can't speak for every other NFL team, but I would imagine, could be wrong, but I would imagine that every other NFL team internally at least has their plan, you know, hatched by now, at least going to the only preseason game that matters. All right, you're playing, you're not, you're playing this much, you're playing that much. It just seems like they're still throwing, I don't want to be unfair to the Jets because maybe they just haven't divulged it, but the way it's presented by Robert Saleh, it comes across as a little disjointed.
Yeah.
As usual, you know, that's one of the problems that we have with Coach there. A little disconnected, a little disoriented in terms of, you know, maybe not everybody on the same page, everybody being married to the same thought. So eventually the good thing is we won't have to wonder about this forever. We'll find out, I would imagine, by tomorrow at the latest here. Game Saturday, I would play him, you would not, and we'll see what they do.
Yeah, but it's more important than just, well, we play him, we wouldn't play him, whatever. And hopefully it's insignificant. Like, last year, it was insignificant. We had the same conversation, and I believe we said the same thing. I wouldn't want Rodgers to play, which goes against my core fundamental beliefs, because generally I do want players to go out there and just at least experience. Like, it used to mean something. You play in the preseason. That's what the preseason was for, to get ready for the season. Preseason, get you ready for the season. And now it's not like that anymore. But in Rodgers' case in particular, I just don't think it's necessary. With Daniel Jones, to me, that's a different story. I think Daniel Jones needs to play in the preseason because Daniel Jones clearly not ready for the regular season by the way that we saw him last year. And it's not even just the injury last week. It's not even just the injury or coming back from that. It's also the Daniel Jones, even in year six, still looks like a rookie at times. So you want as many reps as possible. If it were a rookie quarterback, same thing. I'd want as many reps as possible from my rookie quarterback or young quarterbacks. I think the Falcons made a mistake by not playing Penix in the preseason.
That surprised me.
It just doesn't make any sense to me. So, I mean, maybe they're worried about something. He's injured. Who the hell knows? But if you have a young quarterback or young players on your team, that's what the preseason is for. Get them acclimated and try to simulate real game speed in the NFL. Rodgers, at his age, coming off of what happened last year, doesn't need it. But it's more, BT, to me, about the decision.
Yeah.
From the organizational
or indecision,
and who's making that, and how does that play out? If Robert Saleh definitively does not want Rodgers to play, he should not play. End of story. He's the head coach. Right or wrong, good or bad, it should be on him. If Rodgers doesn't want to play and Saleh does want him to play, that's a different story because you're not going to force a player to play, especially Aaron Rodgers. But I think the other way around, if Rodgers wants to play, and we're getting the inkling that that would be the case because Saleh said weeks ago, he's not playing. End of story. It was over. Rodgers isn't playing in the preseason. They're shutting it down. That was weeks ago. And then it started to open up slowly, and then Rodgers comes out and did dismiss the notion of preseason meaning anything, but you're just getting the feel that maybe Rodgers wants to give it a go and Sala does not.
I would acquiesce a little bit here. To me, it doesn't seem to Rodgers' demands, if indeed Aaron wants to play. Like, think about how out of whack it feels. Like, all right, Aaron, we're going to let you have all this juice and the hammer and a lot of these decisions, except the one that impacts you most directly, how your body feels. Like, let's be consistent. You know, right. if you're going to give him personnel power, which they did a year ago, if you're going to let him skip out on, I know he said it's not really mitigate, whatever the OTA, the way he kind of parsed words there and went to Egypt and he missed a couple of practices. If you're going to let him do that, then I think that you should probably let him make the decision on what he's going to do with his body. Let me throw, maybe this isn't a great example. Let me throw this at you, though. So if it's about the coach really being the one in charge, and I know that Robert Saleh is not an offensive coach, so it would have to be with Hackett and maybe a little Saleh influence, whatever. Let's say it's third and nine, and there's 37 seconds to go. Jets are just out of field goal range, and they need about 9 or 10 yards, not only to get the first down, but to get into field goal range to win the game. And they call the play. And they call a timeout, and the play that they call as an organization, as a staff, I should say, Rodgers doesn't like.
Right.
Based on, hey, coach, you know, and he tells Saleh, and he tells Hackett, I see this, we got to do this. And he gives a suggestion. Should they acquiesce there?
I think ideally, you shouldn't. Whatever the head coach says
should be the play.
Yeah, but in this particular case, how do you not trust Aaron Rodgers more offensively than Robert Saleh? Now, your scenario, you said 3rd and 9.
I'm saying 3rd and 9, or it could be 3rd and 7. Pick any other arbitrary situation.
All right, what about a go-for-it situation? 4th and 2, Rodgers says, we got to go for it. Saleh says no.
I think it's kind of the same premise.
Yeah, I'm not acquiescing there.
Okay.
Like, if you talk about a specific play call, I'm going to side with Rodgers because I trust him offensively more than Saleh.
Mm-hmm.
But if you talk about decision, it's got to be Saleh. He's the head coach.
Like punted going for it.
Yeah, whatever.
I agree, unless it's a situation where it's like, hey, I got it, you know, but I see this, and we've got 3 yards if we do that.
Right.
That's a tempting.
Yeah, but then that's also damning of the head coach, right? An assessment on the head coach.
There's no doubt, but it's also
that's part of the problem.
No question, and that's what he's got to reverse that narrative, Saleh, this year. Hopefully he does, but as long as it's not reckless, like if you're on your own 37, you know, it doesn't matter what Aaron Rodgers says, we're pumping. If you're, you know, it's
got to
be.
Those are easy ones. But
not for Bill Belichick years ago. Remember, he went for. No, I hear you. But as long as it's discussable or at least debatable, I would generally, you know, give the nod to Rodgers and say, all right, big boy, you see this? You've been staring at this defensive front all night. If you think that you see 3 yards here, go get it. You see 6 yards? So, all right, scrap that last play. Go get us. Go get us first down, win the game.
We thought
I would let him do that.
We thought maybe Saleh was changing a little bit. He sounded like, when he was on with Boomer and Geo last week, sounded like a man who was taking accountability and also learning from some mistakes. I think this is going to be telling here how this decision plays out. What the decision is, yes, but more importantly, how the decision plays out about the dynamic with Robert Saleh and how much control he has, even with Aaron Rodgers being an MVP, Hall of Famer, all those different things, Super Bowl winner. Still, Robert Saleh is the head coach. He needs to act like it. BT and Sal on the Fan. We also talked some Mets off of their big win last night. Francisco Alvarez, the importance of him getting going. If he could get going, maybe the Mets can be on that, you know, same path as the Padres or Diamondbacks or Braves. They're going to have to do it offensively. Their pitching is okay, but their bats have to carry them, and Alvarez being an impact bat could go a long way in that regard as well. A friend of Town Fair Tire reminds you that at Town Fair Tire, you always get the guaranteed lowest price on name brand tires. From Connecticut to Maine, nobody beats Town Fair Tire. Nobody. Mike is in Oceanside. What's up, Mike?
Hey, how you doing, guys?
Good. What's up, Mike?
Hey, bub.
Listen, Saleh doesn't know the answer of Rodgers playing yet, because Rodgers hasn't made that decision. If anybody thinks it's anybody but Rodgers' decision, they're out of their mind.
Yeah, but it doesn't matter. It's Robert Saleh's the head coach. And if Robert Saleh said that he didn't want Rodgers to play in the preseason, then why should Rodgers even contemplate playing?
You don't think with Rodgers on the team, he makes more of the decisions for himself than Saleh does?
But don't you think that's a problem?
It is a problem. Rodgers is a problem.
Well, I mean, I don't know if I'm going to go that far that Rodgers is a problem. Why do you say he's a problem? Just because he's the one calling the shots?
His arrogance is what just is going to be the ruination of him.
All right, so let me ask you this here, Mike. Stick with us. All right, so again, somebody else who's not an Aaron Rodgers fan, I could just tell, and that's fine. He's got a lot of detractors out there.
No, I actually was a Rodgers fan.
You were, until, which means you're no longer a Rodgers fan, and that's fine. Yeah, I could care less. Yeah. What I'm saying, though, the arrogance, that's very easy to call this up here with the fan and say, Rodgers is arrogant. That's going to derail the season. Can you be a little more direct, a little bit more substantive? Like, what do you mean? It's lazy.
He comes across as a me player, not a team player.
Okay, again, give me a direct, tangible reason why you believe that. Outside of the 2 days in Egypt, would you? Yeah, I agree
and
with
even
that.
What else? Like, even that, we made a big deal, but all the other stuff outweighs it. What are the other examples?
But even last year, he comes to a new team, and he's got to go to a hideaway retreat. This and that. Instead of embracing
he didn't miss anything last year. He didn't miss anything. Remember, he went in the darkness before he decided that he was going to go to the Jets.
Right, and he came out and he embraced being here, as BT said before, going all these games, taking his teammates to Broadway plays, doing everything he can for the teammates. And if you ask his teammates, they love him. All the teammates love him. As a matter of fact, almost to the point where they look up to him as opposed to the head coach.
From an outsider looking in, it just seems like he's a meat player. That's just my opinion.
Right. Well, that's fair, Mike, and thank you for the call.
It's fairly baseless, but it's your opinion. Yeah,
you're entitled to have your opinion,
yeah,
and that's fine. I don't know where, like, I see it as confidence, and I don't think he's a me player. I think Aaron Rodgers has been a great teammate, a great leader every step of the way. Also always, you know, with the chip on his shoulder, something to prove, which I love about him. I don't see selfish from Aaron Rodgers. And I think his decision to play in the preseason also, if he wanted to play, also would not be selfish. I don't look at it as that. I just look at it as from a solace standpoint. Like, the player could say whatever he wants, even if it is Aaron Rodgers. If I'm the head coach, I'm saying, that's great, Aaron, but you're not playing in the preseason. That's an easy thing to control. You want to talk about Aaron, you got to, you know, call this player, this play, coming from Saleh, that could be a little difficult to take because Saleh is just not the offensive mind that Aaron Rodgers is. You usually would acquiesce.
That's the understatement.
Well, yeah, exactly. Usually you're going to acquiesce in that spot if Rodgers has an idea what he wants to do.
Uh-huh.
Going for it, I don't care if Rodgers says, no, we're going for it on 4th-and-2. If I'm Saleh, I say, no, we're not, we're punting. Whatever the decision is, you're the head coach. At some point, you got to start acting like it. That, to me, is the issue. This is not saying Rodgers is arrogant or has too much control. I'm blaming the head coach for not taking control.
Yeah, listen, I guarantee, and he has said a lot, but I guarantee if Rodgers didn't weigh into the waters that he sometimes wades into with opinions that are contrary on serious things.
You mean like political?
Yeah, That not everybody agrees with. Clearly, I don't think he'd be looked at as selfish. Some people might say he's old. Some people might say, you know, how does he recover from the Achilles? He's 40 years old. Can he really elevate the Jets? I mean, but I think that it slants that way and becomes a little personal. And I think this is fairly easy to see. Some people don't agree with what he says.
Right. So
I think
then
it's
they
all
don't
based
like
on
him.
That.
Well, there was, still is, but there was a faction of people that didn't like him before the Jets even got him, that didn't want any part of him because of all the other stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas, I mean, look, we could both look at the same person and see two different things. I love Aaron Rodgers. I love that he's unafraid to give his unique opinion, regardless of what the pushback is going to be.
Me too.
I love that he plays with a chip on his shoulder, even after being, you know, one of the great quarterbacks that the sport has ever seen, being a Super Bowl winner, winning multiple MVPs. Even after all of that, he still has something to prove. I love all that about. I love the way he embraced New York.
Mm-hmm.
I can't wait to watch him as a legitimate New York athlete. We haven't seen it. We've talked about it ad nauseum here, but we're going to actually see it, knock on wood, going to see it this year. So I love all that about Aaron Rodgers. In this particular case, this should be the head coach's decision whether he wants his star quarterback at the age of 40 coming off of that injury to play in the preseason or not. Eli is calling from Brooklyn. What's up, Eli?
Brandon, Sal, how's it going, guys?
How are you, Eli?
What's up, bud?
Sal, I have two problems with you. Number one, do you think that Todd Bowles made a decision in 2020, 2021, whether Tom Brady was going to play in the preseason or not? Do you think Gary Kubiak made a decision in 2015 whether Peyton Manning would play or not? You're treating this guy like he's a 28, 29-year-old guy, and it's the head coach's decision. that 100% is not true. Of course it's on the 40, 41, or 40-year-old.
That's not true. That's not true. It's not true. First of all, you don't know about those other you don't know about those other examples. If those guys wanted to play, then to me it would be. Now, if they didn't want to play, decision over, because you're not going to force them to play, right? So if Brady doesn't want to play in the preseason, or Peyton Manning, they don't want to play in the preseason, or Rodgers in this case, you can't force them to play, obviously. If they do want to play, to me, it's on the head coach. You're either the head coach or you're not. And if you're the head coach,
I think you're comparing it to Aaron Rodgers saying he wants to play with David Bakhtiari or Randall Cobb. It's not. It's him knowing himself. It's him knowing what's most important for him to be ready for week one. So if he says he wants to, or if he says he doesn't want to play, then 100% I think it's
his decision. That's fine. I'd take it into account. Ultimately, if I'm the head coach and I don't want to risk him playing in the preseason due to injury, I shut it down. Just like you could say that for any other, what about the great pitchers that want to continue to play? And thank you for the call, Eli, that want to go deeper in the games or whatever. We used that example before about Matt Arby.
Well, I was going to bring that up. Yeah.
So,
sure.
He knows his arm best. No, sometimes you don't. Rodgers may think it's best for him and he wants to go out there and play. And because he's experienced, because he's an all-time great, a Hall of Fame, or all those different things, you take that into account. Certainly, you weigh that heavily. But at the end of it, the head coach has to feel comfortable with the decision because he's the head coach. You can take it into account. You can factor it in. You can acquiesce if you want. I'm not doing it. If I don't feel like it's best for Rodgers, I'm not taking that risk. Now, again, is it going to do any harm? Probably not. Like, I'm not saying he's guaranteed to get hurt. To your point, BT, he played last year, and it was fine. It was great. Mm-hmm. Played for a series. Then I would also counter and say, well, what good is playing for a series? You want to play? Go play then. Play. Like, what good's a series going to do? That's really going to get you ready for the regular season? Or is a full quarter or a half or three quarters going to do it? Oh, no, but you wouldn't want to do that, would you? Now, what would you do, BT? You want him to play. Would you let him play for three quarters?
Not three. Not like the old days. Where I'd play him. I'd let him play early into the second quarter. Yeah, I'm kind of with you. Like, if you're going to play, dusting him out there for six or seven plays if you happen to get one first down, I don't really know what that does. But to get him out there for a good, 12 to 15 snaps, let it loose three, four, five, six times on some throws downfield, get a little sync with the old lineman. Yeah, no problem playing in the second quarter. What bothers me is the inconsistencies. Like, I know they've got the red jerseys, but what is the difference outside of that? Which, is a big thing, with these joint practices. So did Aaron Rodgers do joint practices? The answer is yes.
Right.
So you can do a joint practice. You can't play 13 minutes of real game time against the Giants.
Fair enough.
That's so stupid.
Yeah, but then to counter that, he's getting that action that you want him to get in the preseason anyway in the joint practices. It's basically the same thing. So it's not like he's just rolling off the wheelchair with the injured ACL or torn Achilles or whatever, getting out there and then throwing the football week one. No, he's been practicing joint practices and the scrimmages, whatever. He's getting that feel in kind of real
game
speed anyway.
But it's not kind of real speed. It's not the same. You know, the red jersey comes off. You can get popped.
Right, but even Rodgers' words himself was the preseason is not real football.
Mm-hmm.
Quote, preseason, not real football. Now, again, I don't know if he wants to play or not. He hasn't said that. We haven't heard. All we heard was the initial remarks from Robert Saleh saying, or I believe it came from Saleh.
Yeah, saying he's not playing
in the preseason.
Then it seemed like that cooled a little bit, and there's been some mixed signals since then. And I think the mixed signals have come, from Rodgers saying behind closed doors, I might be amenable to going out there and playing a little bit. I might want to dust myself off, which I'd like to see him do.
More on this, plus we'll get to your Mets calls as well. We'll work in the Giants before we say goodbye. Evan Atiki coming up live from Giants camp as well, so we'll definitely talk some more Giants. 888-808-1019, BT and Sal on the Fan.
It's the most anticipated WNBA season in history.
And you know what that means.
Court is back in session.
Welcome to Queens of the Court, an Odyssey original podcast.
I'm your girl, Cheryl Swoop.
And I'm Jordan Robinson. All WNBA season long, we'll be bringing you interviews with star athletes, analysis on your favorite teams,
and lots of hot takes.
Order in the court.
Follow and listen to Queens of the Court on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
When this happened, you talked about it on The Fan.
There's a snap. There's a kick. It is up. It is no good. No one missed. 4 seconds left. The Giants have won Super Bowl 25 by the score of 20-19.
When New York sports happens, talk about it here. The Fan, 101.9 FM, and always live on the free Odyssey app.
It is the Jersey Mike's Yankees box office blitz. We've got a pair of field level tickets. See the Bronx Bombers against Colorado at Yankee Stadium Sunday, August 25th. Right now, I'll be calling number 13 at 866-540-WFAN. That's 866-540-9326 for your chance to win. It's all from Jersey Mike's, the official sub sandwich shop of the New York Yankees box office blitz and The Fan. Listen again tomorrow for another chance to win. WFAN night tonight at Yankee Stadium. BT, I know you'll be on hand. First 15,000, get the John and Susan t-shirt. John Sterling going to be in the booth for innings 4 and 5. Should be a fun night out at the stadium as they take on Cleveland. And what I think is, look, important as far as if the Yankees get swept in the series, does it mean they're not going to the playoffs? No, but it is an important series, not only because of where they're at with the division, trying to win that division from Baltimore, but where the Yankees are at overall. This is a good measuring stick, good barometer here, taking on a very good Cleveland team with a good bullpen.
Guardians, they've got some athletes. They can run a little bit. They're going to put some pressure on the defense. Yeah, I don't disagree. I mean, listen, man, it's not May 9th. It's August 20th. I mean, it's okay to push this thing forward a little bit here. So I'm really looking forward to watching Heald deal in perfect. I've never seen him pitch in person yet. And this will be a lot of fun. And the numbers are, you know, overall really good. You know, 12-6, ZRA, you know, 3.25. And he got a ton of strikeouts. His whip is fairly low. You know, he had the great start. Then he obviously got knocked around a little bit. Now he stabilized things. Mm-hmm. So, you know, how does he finish up? Is there another fluctuation, or was that 1-5 or 6 start, you know, slip up just kind of the outlier? I'm curious to see. And I want to say, I'm sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt you there, but I'm very curious. I know he did well his first game back, but I really hope Aaron Boone doesn't start writing Trevino's name in a lineup ever. I better see Austin Wells.
Come on, you're going to disrespect Trevino? Trevi! Come on.
Yeah, I mean,
good defensive catcher. Defensive catcher.
I know, he's the best framer in baseball.
Garrett Cole loves throwing to him.
I know. He does. I'm not trying to denigrate is what he brings to the table, but to me, it's very interesting where I know it's matchup driven, lefty, lefty, right. Understood. All right. But, you know, this guy, the young player, Austin Wells, has been batting 4 really for the most part for the last month or so. And Trevino comes back and he barely plays.
No, Wells has got to be in there. Austin Wells has been the difference-making bat in the Yankee turnaround. And when I say turnaround, I mean going from one of the worst teams in the sport for a 7-week stretch to being an okay team. Because they've been 8-7 in their last 15, as we went over yesterday, against teams that aren't very good. Outside of that 5-game winning streak going right into the All-Star break, the trade deadline, the Yankees have been an okay team as opposed to a bad team. So, I mean, look, Austin Wells, when they started to turn things around before Jazz got here, it was him having an impact. I don't know how you could take that bat out of the lineup. You want to tell me you want to have him DH?
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
I'm fine with that. He's got to be in the lineup.
Again, the Scooble thing, I get lefty. I just hope that we don't fall into this thing where it's like, all right, Trevino's back. Hey, bottom line is this. Austin Wells, the last 30 days, OPS 914.
Right.
He's been one of your best hitters.
Correct. And that to me, was more symbolic of their turnaround where the lineup started to lengthen out outside. Remember, right before that, it was they were getting swept by the Mets, and they had Jermaine Jones and J.D. Davis.
Oh,
so with Austin, I mean, that was a real thing. And then Austin Wells started to emerge. Maybe it was that Friday night in Boston, as a matter of fact. But once he started that turnaround, you really started to feel a difference with that Yankee line. Maybe it was even a little bit before that. Anyway, we've been talking some Aaron Rodgers and some Mets as well. Sasha's on Long Beach. What's up, Sasha?
Hey, Sal. What's going on, Brandon? I appreciate you guys for taking my call. I'm a long-time listener, first-time caller, but I want to talk about the Mets. You guys really hammered hard about the Aaron Rodgers and the Yankees, but look, we've got a 3-game set against the Orioles, a 3-game set against the Padres, and a 3-game set against the Diamondbacks away. We got our butts handed to us in the Athletics, butts handed to us against the Mariners, not getting the sweep. Does this little 10-game stretch, 9-game stretch decide the season? We need to get, you know, completely change around. We call ourselves a wild card team. We started the season 0-5. We go on a little stretch, but the fact is, if you don't turn around right now, the season is a complete waste. Complete and utter waste. We've been given an opportunity to fight for the wild card, and here's the main reason where we got to go for it. You got to
See, I disagree, though. You know, I disagree, Sasha, with the complete waste part. With the complete waste part, and thank you for the call. I also disagree with that. I don't think this 10-game stretch is going to define their season or keep them in it, whatever word you want to say.
If it's 6-4, 4-6, 5-5, or some variants of that, even 3-7, or probably not, if it's worse, and unless that's a good start, if it's worse than 3-7, I think it might.
Right, but I just feel like, if they go 2-8, I mean, maybe they could fall out of it, but... We've had this conversation along the way many times with this group. Is this going to be the stretch that knocks them out? Is this going to be the stretch that defines their season? Is this road trip going to be it? And they continue to answer every single time. It may not be great, you know, like the 10-game West Coast trip, the first one, traveling west and then coming back east and then going back west. All right, they were 4-6, big deal. And they kind of just tread water. That's fine. And I anticipate the same thing. Like, even if they go 3-7, which would be awful, especially now after getting the first one from the Orioles,
yep,
it still, to me, wouldn't knock them completely out of it. Remember, too, Braves, we didn't talk about this yesterday, Austin Riley now basically for the rest of the regular season.
Broken hand, right?
Yeah, broken hand. Got hit in the hand with a 97-mile-an-hour fastball, out 6 to 8 weeks. That takes him out the rest of the regular season at least.
Yeah.
That's a big loss for Atlanta.
He hasn't had a great season, though.
Nobody really has with the Braves. But just as they were starting to get healthy, getting Harris back, starting to play a little bit better, now they're dealt that blow. I just feel like... I'm not saying the Mets are going to make the postseason, but they're not going to fall out of it either. I think we can let those fears go. They're here. This is it. This is the wild card race. And I don't anticipate a 1-9 stretch burying the Mets.
No, me neither. And I thought last night's win was huge. I mean, because of the player who supplied the jolt at the end. I mean, now listen, it could have been anyway. Iglesias could have had a walk-off home run. And he's still hitting like 330 or 340, amazingly. But the fact, to me, could have been anybody, but the fact that it was Alvarez, who was so pivotal, you know, at least in his rookie year with the 25 home runs and the constant barrage of energy.
Yeah.
He just brings something that, you know, most of these Mets, you know, Martinez is very stoic and understandably he's a veteran.
Right.
You know, Pete's a little goofy. He just brings a little different jolt, which I think is something that they need here. So, let alone, you know, if he's going to start contributing with an offensive, a little push here. I think it was a really big win. I don't think the Mets implode. I really don't. But the difference is, you know, going back to the A's series, lose 2 out of 3, got a chance to sweep the Marlins, don't do it. No, you're right. 3-7 wouldn't destroy their season. But I guess because they don't bury the bad teams, on some level, I expect them to still lose games that they shouldn't in the future.
Right, which may prevent them from being ultimately a playoff team. But the idea of, if they don't do, you know, go 6-4 or 5-5, I don't see them getting buried. You know, I question, my biggest question with the Mets is, will they be able to handle the pressure of a postseason push? The race for a postseason spot, specifically when you're talking about Braves and Mets head-to-head. And I don't have the answer to that, because based on recent history, they can't handle the pressure. Whether it was the pressure that was on them in 2022, going into 2023, the pressure on them the beginning of this year, whatever it may be, they have not shown to handle the pressure. And then when the pressure was off at 11 games under and everybody wrote them off, that's when they got back into it. Then the pressure started to come back up a little bit, and the Mets haven't been the same team since the All-Star break. So can they handle the pressure? That's the biggest question that I don't know the answer to. Are they good enough to compete and contend? I think the answer is yes. They have the pieces, whether it's Severino, who threw a complete game shutout the other day, Peterson, who's been solid, you know, Buto's been a nice weapon out of the bullpen, getting Daniel Nunez back, which should help, Diaz, the closer, obviously the guys in the lineup, Lindor, Vientos, Nimmo, Alvarez, Alonso, like McNeil even, they have, J.D. Martinez, they have the pieces. Could they be the best team? Could they win a World Series? No, but they have some pieces where they should be a playoff team. It's just a matter of how these guys are going to perform down the stretch. Not like they need...
That's not outlandish, what you just said, by the way.
Yeah.
I mean, everything you just said makes total sense. Yeah. I've always thought they're going to fall a little bit short, but
right,
the way you just laid it out, I mean, it's not like you're speaking a different language.
Right.
They got the pieces to hang around for sure.
And also, we don't know what... if Atlanta were playing at their peak, the Mets would have no shot.
Mm-hmm.
The Phillies and Braves would be so far gone that the Mets would be battling with the Diamondbacks. You'd be, you know, wondering if...
Well, they probably would have been sellers at that point.
Yeah,
like,
well,
if the Phillies are the... You know, when I think about that, the Braves were having the season that many of us thought that they would have, and the Phillies played better ball, Mets may have been sellers.
They're a little bit better than what we thought. They're 5 games over .500 right
now. Yeah, that's a little bit better than I thought.
Yeah, even if, you know, I mean, well, Even if at best we thought they were 500 team, five over is a little bit better than that. Mm-hmm. But still, I mean, that's just kind of what we expected the Mets to be here. All right, BT and Sal on the Fan, 888-808-1019 is the number to call. More of your calls, whether it's Jets and Aaron Rodgers or the Mets or the Yankees, we'll get to that as well. And I do want to do Giants coming up the final hour as we lead into Evan and Tiki live from Giants camp.
Yeah, I got a little something else on the Giants.
Start some trouble and call the Fan. 888-808-1019. Powered by Paramount Plus. Stream the NFL on CBS live on Paramount Plus. Now time for Bold Face Lie, Bold Face Truth with Brendan Tierney and Sal Licata.
All right, BT and Sal back on the Fan. Hoff is on vacation, enjoying himself, I'm sure, with his family in Disneyland or Disney World, whichever one, the one in Florida, I think.
It is.
So Zoo is filling in today. What do we got, Zoo?
Oh, I love that music, by the way, guys. It's great music.
That's a good song. I'm a big fan as well.
I'm into it. And, you know, speaking of Hoff, he is down in Disney, mm-hmm. as you said, Disney World, not yep. Disneyland.
Okay.
And the first thing we are going to go to here on Bullface Truth, Bullface Lies, or I believe Bullface Lie, Bullface Truth, I should say, mm-hmm. Going to Disney during the summer is the worst time to go to Disney. Bald-faced lie, bald-faced truth.
Yeah, I'll start with this because I got thrown into this 2 years in a row. And I said never again. The worst. Bald-faced truth. I went...
Is summer specifically or just in general?
No, summer specific.
Okay.
Summer. I went 2 Julys in a row, one of which was for my daughter's birthday, which right. was amazing.
Okay.
But then for some reason, I got dragged back the next year. And between the heat and the crowds, like... I felt like I won when I won something of significance when I just merely got back to the hotel. It was a bat between the people, dude, and the stifling humidity. And they were so young at that point. They were just like five. I think it was her fifth birthday. Yeah. 5 and 6. It was rough.
Yeah. I guess I've never gone in my life in the summer, as I try to think back. Usually it's like February.
Yeah, it's pretty much. Yeah. Lucky you.
Well, I mean, my daughter's only 3 now, so we haven't had that conversation yet, but...
Well, think about that, because you talk about when you were younger, or you didn't take your daughter
we
yet,
We never
did
even
you?
Went. As
So you've never been there?
We went as kid. No, no, I went as an adult multiple times.
With your wife?
Once with an ex-girlfriend.
I got you.
Actually, twice. Now I think about 2 different girlfriends.
Mm, wow.
Yeah, once with
Sal's go-to move was take it to Tomorrowland.
Yeah, 15. Hey, you want to
no,
go
my
over
first,
that?
The first time I remember, our parents.
Come on, honey, let's take a little ride on the Pirates of Caribbean.
Dude, 95, 94, 95, we drove down as a family to Orlando and went to Universal. I know.
From Long Island?
Yeah, my dad's Suburban. Yeah, it was actually not bad. I liked the road trip. So it was fun. Like you made.
I hear you.
It was fun.
I mean, I've driven across the country, so yeah. I get it. But
so and then we didn't go to Disney. We went to Universal Studios, which is cool.
Universal's good. Yeah. MGM was MGM open at that point.
I don't know, but we didn't go there. I don't think.
Wait, so you drove all the way there? You didn't go to Disney?
Correct. You have to dig up my father and ask him. He probably didn't want to deal with the crap that you're complaining about.
Smart man.
Yeah, exactly. That's exactly right. Go to Disney. What are you out of your mind? Universal, maybe.
Come on, kids. We're gonna drive.
He liked driving. He didn't mind that.
Drive for 2 days, and we're gonna let you stare at Disney, but we're not gonna go inside of Disney.
Yeah.
Anyway,
there's no amount of money that could get me down there. The humidity, like you said,
that's
BT,
crazy.
I mean, come on.
Yeah, I don't think that I would do. I'm trying to remember when I went with my ex girlfriend, but I went. We went with her family. They lived in Florida.
Oh, seriously? You went with the family?
Well, I went down to Florida to stay at her parents' house, and then we drove from there to Orlando, the park, stayed at the park, and then we went. That's when I rode the Tower of Terror, and almost, you know,
I love the Tower of Terror. It's good.
Oh,
you didn't like that?
I was grabbing onto my girlfriend's mother's leg for dear life. Like, I was trying to grab the handle, but there wasn't much room. And then I went again with another ex-girlfriend. Now that I think about it, I don't know what was going on here.
You have a serial connection to Disney.
And then I went recently with my current wife and my sister and her kids, Joey and Riley.
I remember when you did that. I remember you saying that once.
Yeah, but we did Disney Park for a couple of days and then the cruise. But this is all February, so I'm with you. That's a bald-faced truth. That's the worst time to go in the summer. And Hoff, like you used to, Hoff keeps getting dragged into it.
Every year he goes, this poor guy.
It is insane. I feel like every year we're talking about it. But God bless him. Man, the guy does it. All right, next up, though, you guys were at Fanatics Fest. Mm-hmm. A lot of great stuff over there. Looked like an incredible time. I wish I could have been there. But the one thing that I feel like was the biggest over there is, or I guess there were two, and they'll both be questions. The first one is memorabilia, getting things signed, getting pictures, mm-hmm. getting jerseys, all that kind of cool stuff. Bold-faced lie, bold-faced truth. When you get a piece of memorabilia, you need to get it authenticated.
I think it depends on what it is. We were just talking about that actually with cards. Is BT starting to get into the cards? I know you and Colt getting into it.
Yeah,
I think for cards, it also depends what you want from it. Mm-hmm. If you want it to increase in value and sell it, then yes, it's a bold-faced truth. You have to get it authenticated. If you want it just because it's special to you and you don't care about selling it or having the value increase, then no, you don't need it to get authenticated. I do not have anything in my collection authenticated yet, but mm-hmm. I do want to get a couple of tickets, though.
I have a dumb question before the quick answer. So I told you the story about how my dad was playing softball. They met Hank Aaron back in 1973. Mm-hmm. Hank Aaron signed a ball. Mm-hmm. So I believe my dad that Hank handed him the ball.
Right.
But and I would never sell it. It's going to be handed down and stay in the family. But if I ever wanted to...
You can get that all.
But how would they authenticate that? What's the process of authenticating a signature that's 51 years old?
You send it in saying this is a ball signed by Hank Aaron or whatever, and then they authenticate it saying if it is or isn't.
Oh, no, I figured that. Yeah. So, then the subset here is, let's say I send it in and it gets lost. Well, what's my recourse at that point?
That I don't know. There has to be some level of insurance. I don't know because I haven't done it yet myself.
Okay.
But people do it all the time.
I have not authenticated. I think with the baseball cards, we get a little bit more deeply into that. I would probably go that route with a few things. Yeah. I'm trying to think like what I have. I really, the things that are signed, like I've got a signed Namath jersey, Bernard King, and Mattingly. Right. Now, I got those three from, Steiner Sports, Brandon. I've known him for a long time. So, I mean, I just took the man at his word.
Right.
I didn't go out and get it authenticated. I'm also not looking to sell it. It's in
but
my bank cave.
But they usually...
They do it. It's got the little sticker on
it. Yeah, exactly. That means it's authenticated for that.
So I don't have to do it to prove that their authentication is authentic?
Correct.
Okay, got it.
Right. No, that you don't have to. Grading is different. But anyway, it's interesting. All right, what do you got? Last one for you, Zoo.
Last one, and now, Sal, I'm sorry. I feel like your answer on this probably has changed in the past week or so. And based on what's going on in Williamsport, there's a bunch of kids that might be feeling this way too. But bald-faced lie, bald-faced truth. It is not best to meet your heroes.
That is a bald-faced lie. Even with my interaction with Michael Vick on Saturday, which was disappointing to say the least, and even though there have been, like, any, whether it's an athlete turning you down or turning you away or a famous person that you see, like, I still think it's worth meeting the person and also just not taking that one little interaction to heart in most cases. I still think you'd rather meet the person, and I would not shy away from, don't ever meet your heroes. Nonsense. You have to remember what they are, too. They're human. So you shouldn't put anybody on a pedestal first and foremost. But I would say that's a lie, I think, a bald-faced lie. I would still want to meet, your heroes or whatever.
That's my answer as well. Bald-faced lie here. Listen, do I think the kids maybe judge their heroes or other adults the way we might as grown-ups? Like, I think we'd be a little bit more judgmental, whereas you have a 9-year-old kid looking up at Aaron Judge like Superman, and let's just say Aaron Judge was rude, or which I don't believe. I think he's an absolute class act, one of the best we've had, and will. He's just amazing.
Yeah.
But if he was, I'm just using it
as
an example.
Like, he doesn't have time or whatever.
Yeah. I think as an adult, I think I would process it as, well, that's disappointing. My God, I thought Aaron Judge was this great guy. Not that it would break my heart necessarily, but I'd be like, I'd process it one way. If I'm a 9-year-old kid looking up with these starry, wide-open eyes, I don't think I would look at that. I would just be so immersed in the greatness of the person in front of me. So a bald-faced lie. I think it's also, as you just said, it's important to remember that these people are fallible.
Right.
That's all there is to it.
They're humans.
Human beings,
Put them on a pedestal. I'm trying to think if I ever had a bad one as a kid.
A bad one.
And I don't recall, have you ever, maybe disappointed that you didn't get somebody to sign something, but, I don't ever remember being upset.
Me neither.
As a kid with an interaction. Butch Husky was rude one time, but I was but it wasn't even to me. Like, some of the guys could be rude. Even McCarver, I was just, it happened. I wasn't really terribly disappointed. Mm-hmm. But, I mean, as a young kid, I don't feel like I've ever been...
No. I mean, first time I met Mattingly, it was everything I had hoped for.
How old were you?
I was going into, I believe, my senior of high school. I was older.
And where'd you meet him? At the stadium?
At Yankee Stadium.
Got him to sign something?
My long story short, I did. I wasn't really interested in that. It was just more talking shop, My one of my best friends,
lefty to lefty, you
yeah,
know.
Of course, the whole spiel, first base, yeah, federal first base. Yeah, trying to give Donnie some tips here. The back was banged up at this point. Now, so one of my best friends, his dad was the former COO of Bulova Watches.
Okay,
right?
Yeah.
Bulova used to be an advertiser at the stadium, blah blah blah. So I remember I was a camp counselor out at I think it was called Adventureland in Long Island.
I remember.
That's
very,
the name of it.
Right? We went there quite a bit.
Okay,
yeah.
So we went there like 3 years in a row, and I remember that. I was out there with the kids, and I had my car. I was obviously driving, so I was probably 17. And his dad got us not only four passes. This is actually pretty cool. Four passes to go to the dugout to watch BP, to be involved, like VIP. We actually had, I parked in the Yankee Stadium player parking lot.
Wow.
Which was sick, and I got there so early. I remember seeing, like, Mel Hall and Scott Sanderson and Pat Kelly and Charlie Hayes, like that.
I love
that,
those Yankees, Bart, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah,
they were,
yeah, those are great Yankees.
Yeah, that was before, although Charlie did catch the final out in 96.
I remember,
take it easy.
Yeah.
And it was just so, like, even though I was 17, I mean, you know, still impressionable, I guess, as a baseball player, but it was just amazing, you know, seeing them get out of their cars and, like, what music they were banging, what they were driving, what they were wearing. I'm like, oh, my God. I'm in the players' parking lot. I remember the first time I met Patrick, he was a little...
But wait, you didn't tell me the Mattingly thing. You didn't pay it off. So where'd you meet him?
Oh, I'm sorry. So, I just parked to go in, then we went into the stadium, but I remember sitting... Actually, Charlie Hayes was not that nice, but I didn't really care.
Right,
because it was Charlie Hayes. No disrespect. And, so I'm in the dugout, and the former PR guy for the Yankees, this is what happened. He said, they were not good at this point. You heard some of the names. I just got to meet Mattingly. I don't care about Jesse freaking Barfield. Yeah. He sucks. He's hitting 212. He's just strike out 200 times. I mean, I didn't say that, but I'm thinking it. I need to meet Mattingly, right? He's like, well, all right, listen, it was a week night. He goes, the one thing about Donnie, he's great, but he's very particular with his back regimen and his pregame routine. He really doesn't meet fans during the week. He'll do it a little bit on the weekend.
Right.
I'm like, come on, man. I don't know his name. So, Zillow does it now. Yeah. Forget his name. Please, I play first base, everything I'm throwing at him.
I'm not surprised by you, you know.
Push it.
Yeah.
Well, it worked. So, before I got to meet Mattingly, and this really jumped out to me. He's coming up the dugout steps, and the Yankees were a goofball, motley crew at this point. And they're like half stretching, uniforms, like they looked like slobs. Like, they didn't even care if they were there. Soon as Mattingly came up those dugout steps and walked in front of the grass in front of the dugout, like there were 10 or 12 guys, they all snapped into attention. It was like, the captain is here. Even though we stink, we got to show respect. It was really eye-opening how that happened. And then I finally got to meet him, and I got a baseball. And then, of course, now I'm showing him my stance. Of course, I'm taking it overboard.
Yeah.
You know your partner. And he was the best. I remember shaking his hand. Yeah. And being so taken back how his grip and his forearms.
Yeah.
Because they didn't look particularly, yoked on TV. But Donnie in person, like his thighs, his forearms, his neck, pretty stacked.
And he was good to you?
He was amazing.
That's awesome.
The best.
See, I love that.
Yep.
And that's why you want to meet your heroes.
That's right.
And most times it's going to be fun.
So how did you feel when you met me? Get to meet your hero,
We could do this the easy way or the hard way.
Oh, God, that is...
BT and Sal, the fan, we'll come back. More of your calls on the other side, whether it is the Mets, whether it's Aaron Rodgers. Of course, that's been the theme of the day. And in case you missed anything, check it out on the free Odyssey app. We'll also work in some Giants next hour as we get set to hand it over to Evan and Tiki live from Giants camp as well. So we have plenty to do before we say goodbye this final hour.
It's the most anticipated WNBA season in history.
And you know what that means.
Court is back in session.
Welcome to Queens of the Court, an Odyssey original podcast.
I'm your girl, Cheryl Swoops.
And I'm Jordan Robinson. All WNBA season long, we'll be bringing you interviews with star athletes, analysis on your favorite teams,
and lots of hot takes.
Order, order in the court.
Follow and listen to Queens of the Court on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Some trouble and call the fan. 888-808-1019. Powered by Paramount Plus. Stream the NFL on CBS live on Paramount Plus. Now time for Bold Face Lie, Bold Face Truth with Brendan Tierney and Sal Licata.
All right, BT and Sal back on the fan. Hoff is on vacation, enjoying himself, I'm sure, with his family in Disneyland or Disney World, whichever one, the one in Florida, I think.
It is.
So Zoo is filling in today. What do we got, Zoo?
Oh, I love that music, by the way, guys. That's great music.
That's a good song. I'm a big fan as well.
I'm into it. And, speaking of Hoff, he is down in Disney, as you said, Disney World, not Disneyland.
Okay.
And The first thing we are going to go to here on Boldface Truth, Boldface Lies, or I believe Boldface Lie, Boldface Truth, I should say, mm-hmm. is going to, or not is going to get Disney, going to Disney during the summer is the worst time to go to Disney. Boldface Lie, Boldface Truth.
Yeah, I'll start with this because I got thrown into this 2 years in a row. And I said never again. The worst. Boldface Truth. I went.
Is summer specifically or just in general?
No, dude. Summer specific.
Okay.
Summer. I went 2 Julys in a row, one of which was for my daughter's birthday, which right. was amazing.
Okay.
But then for some reason, I got dragged back the next year. And between the heat and the crowds, like, I felt like I won when I, like, I won something of significance when I just merely got back to the hotel. It was a bat between the people, dude, and the stifling humidity. And they were so young at that point. They were just like five. I think it was her fifth birthday. Yeah. 5 and 6. It was rough.
Yeah. I guess I've never gone in my life in the summer as I try to think back. Usually it's like February.
Yeah, it's pretty much. Yeah. Lucky you.
Well, I mean, my daughter's only 3 now, so we haven't had that conversation yet. But
well, think about that, because you talk about when you were younger, or you didn't take your daughter yet,
did
you?
We never even went. As
So you've never been there?
We went as kid. No, I went as an adult multiple times.
With your wife?
Well, once with an ex-girlfriend.
I got you.
Actually, twice. Now, they've got 2 different girlfriends.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, you once know, with
Sal's go-to move was take it to Tomorrowland.
Yeah, 15. Hey, you want to go
my
over to
first,
Epcot?
The first time I remember, our parents.
Come on, honey, let's take a little ride on the Pirates of the Caribbean.
Dude, 95, 94, 95, we drove down as a family to Orlando and went to Universal. I know. Universal.
From Long Island?
Yeah, my dad's Suburban. Yeah, it was actually not bad. I liked the road trip. It's always fun. Like, you may.
I got you. I hear
it
you.
It was fun.
I mean, I've driven across the country, so yeah. I get it. But
so, and then we didn't go to Disney. We went to Universal Studios, which is cool.
Universal's good. Yeah. MGM. Was MGM open at that point?
I don't know. But we didn't go there, I don't think.
Wait, so you drove all the way there? You didn't go to Disney?
Correct. You have to dig up my father and ask him.
I don't know.
He probably didn't want to deal with the crap that you're complaining about.
Smart man.
Yeah, exactly. That's exactly right. Go to Disney. What are you out of your mind? Universal, maybe.
Come on, kids. We're gonna drive.
He liked driving. He didn't mind that.
We're drive for 2 days, and we're gonna let you stare at Disney, but we're not gonna go inside of Disney.
Yeah.
Anyway,
there's no amount of money that could get me down there. The humidity, like you said,
that's
BT,
crazy.
I mean, come on.
Yeah, I don't think that I would do. I'm trying to remember when I went with my ex girlfriend, but I went. We went with her family. They lived in Florida.
Oh, serious? Related? You went with the family?
Well, I went down to Florida to stay at her parents' house, and then we drove from there to Orlando, to the park, stayed at the park, and then we went. That's when I rode the Tower of Terror, and almost, you know,
I love the Tower of Terror. It's good.
Oh,
you didn't like that?
I was grabbing onto my girlfriend's mother's leg for dear life. Like, help me! Well, I was trying to grab the handle, but there wasn't much room. And then I went again with another ex-girlfriend. Now that I think about it, I don't know what was going on here.
You have a serial connection to Disney.
And then I went recently with my current wife and my sister and her kids, Joey and Riley.
I remember when you did that. I remember you saying that once.
Yeah, but we did Disney Park for a couple days and then the cruise. But this is all February, so I'm with you. That's a bald-faced truth. It's the worst time to go in the summer. And Hoff, like you used to, Hoff keeps getting dragged into it.
Every year he goes, this poor guy.
It is insane. I feel like every year we're talking about it. God bless him, man. The guy does it. All right, next up, though, you guys were at Fanatics Fest. Mm-hmm. A lot of great stuff over there. Looked like an incredible time. I wish I could have been there. But the one thing that I feel like was the biggest over there is, or I guess there were two, and they'll both be questions. The first one is memorabilia, getting things signed, getting pictures, mm-hmm. getting jerseys, all that kind of cool stuff. Bold-faced lie, bold-faced truth. When you get a piece of memorabilia, you need to get it authenticated.
I think it depends on what it is. We were just talking about that actually with cards. Is BT starting to get into the cards? I know you and Colt getting into it.
Yeah,
I think for cards, it depends. It also depends what you want from it.
Mm-hmm.
If you want it to increase in value and sell it, then yes, it's a bold-faced truth. You have to get it authenticated. If you want it just because it's special to you and you don't care about selling it or having the value increase, then no, you don't need it to get authenticated. I do not have anything in my collection authenticated yet, but mm-hmm. I do want to get a couple of tickets, though.
I have a dumb question before the quick answer. So I told you the story about how my dad was playing softball. They met Hank Aaron back in 1973. Hank Aaron signed a ball. Mm-hmm. So I believe my dad that Hank handed him the ball.
Right.
But and I would never sell it. It's going to be handed down and stay in the family. But if I ever wanted to.
You can get that all.
But how would they authenticate that? What's the process of authenticating a signature that's 51 years old?
You send it in saying this is a ball signed by Hank Aaron or whatever. And then they authenticate it saying if it is or isn't.
Oh, no. I figured that. Yeah. So, then the subset here is let's say I send it in and it gets lost. Well, what's my recourse at that point?
That I don't know. There has to be some level of insurance. I don't know because I haven't done it yet myself.
Okay.
But people do it all the time.
I have not authenticated. I think with the baseball cards, as we get a little bit more deeply into that, I would probably go that route with a few things. Yeah. I'm trying to think like what I have. I really, the things that are signed, like I've got a signed Namath jersey, Bernard King, and Mattingly.
Right.
Now, I got those three from, Steiner Sports.
Right, Brandon.
I've known him for a long time. So, I mean, I just took the man at his word.
Right.
I didn't go out and get it authenticated. I'm also not looking to sell it.
They
do it. It's got the little sticker on there.
Yeah, exactly. That means it's authenticated for that.
So I don't have to do it to prove that their authentication is authentic?
Correct.
Okay, got it.
Right. No, that you don't have to. Grading is different.
But anyway, it's interesting.
All right, what do you got? Last one for you, Zoo.
Last one, and now, Sal, I'm sorry. I feel like your answer on this probably has changed in the past week or so. And based on what's going on in Williamsport, there's a bunch of kids that might be feeling this way too. But bald face lie, bald face truth. It is not best to meet your heroes.
That is a bald face lie. Even with my interaction with Michael Vick on Saturday, which was disappointing to say the least. And even though there have been, like, any, whether it's an athlete turning you down or turning you away or a famous person that you see, like, I still think it's worth meeting the person and also just not taking that one little interaction to heart in most cases. I still think you'd rather meet the person and I would not shy away from, don't ever meet your heroes. Nonsense. You have to remember what they are, too. They're human. So you shouldn't put anybody on a pedestal first and foremost. But I would say that's a lie, I think, a bald-faced lie. I would still want to meet, your heroes or whatever.
That's my answer as well. Bald-faced lie here. Listen, do I think that kids maybe judge their heroes or other adults the way we might as grown-ups? Like, I think we'd be a little bit more judgmental, whereas you have a 9-year-old kid looking up at Aaron Judge like Superman, and let's just say Aaron Judge was rude, or which I don't believe. I think he's an absolute class act, one of the best we've had, and Will, he's just amazing.
Yeah.
But if he was, I'm just using it as
rude,
an example.
Like he doesn't have time or whatever.
Yeah. I think as an adult, I think I would process it as, that's disappointing. My God, I thought Aaron Judge was this great guy. Not that it would break my heart necessarily, but I'd be like, I'd process it one way. If I'm a 9-year-old kid looking up with these starry, wide-open eyes, I don't think I would look at that. I would just be so immersed in the greatness of the person in front of me. So a bald-faced lie. I think it's also, as you just said, it's important to remember that these people are fallible.
Right.
That's all there is to it.
They're humans.
Human beings,
Shouldn't put them on a pedestal. I'm trying to think if I ever had a bad one as a kid.
A bad one.
And I don't recall, have you ever, maybe disappointed that you didn't get somebody to sign something, but I don't ever remember being upset.
Me neither.
As a kid with an interaction. Husky was rude one time, but I was But it wasn't even to me. Some of the guys could be rude. Even McCarver, I was just, it happened. I wasn't really terribly disappointed. Mm-hmm. But I mean, as a young kid, I don't feel like I've ever been.
No. I mean, first time I met Mattingly, it was everything I had hoped for.
How old were you?
I was going into, I believe, my senior year of high school. I was older.
And where'd you meet him? At the stadium?
At Yankee Stadium.
Got him to sign something?
My long story short, I did. I wasn't really interested in that. It was just more talking shop, My one of my best friends,
lefty to lefty,
the whole spiel, first base, try to give Donnie some tips here. The back was banged up at this point. One of my best friends, his dad was the former COO of Bulova Watches.
Okay,
Bulova used to be an advertiser at the stadium, So I remember I was a camp counselor out at I think it was called Adventureland in Long Island.
I remember.
That's the name of it.
We went there quite a bit.
So we went there 3 years in a row, and I remember that. I was out there with the kids, and I had my car. I was obviously driving, so I was probably 17. And his dad got us not only four passes. This is actually pretty cool. Four passes to go to the dugout to watch BP, to be involved, VIP. We actually had, I parked in the Yankee Stadium player parking lot.
Wow.
Which was sick, and I got there so early. I remember seeing, Mel Hall and Scott Sanderson and Pat Kelly and Charlie Hayes, like that.
I love those Yankees, those are great Yankees.
Although Charlie did catch the final out in 96.
I remember.
And it was just so, like, even though I was 17, I mean, you know, still impressionable, I guess, as a baseball player, but it was just amazing, you know, seeing them get out of their cars and, like, what music they were banging, what they were driving, what they were wearing. I'm like, oh, my God. I'm in the players' parking lot. I remember the first time I met Patrick. He was a little.
But wait, you didn't tell me the Mattingly thing. You didn't pay it off. So where'd you meet him?
Oh, So I just parked to go in. Then we went into the stadium. But I remember sitting. Actually, Charlie Hayes was not that nice, but I didn't really care because it was Charlie Hayes. No disrespect. And so I'm in the dugout, and the former PR guy for the Yankees. This is what happened. He said, they were not good at this point. You heard some of the names. I just got to meet Maddie. I don't care about Jesse freaking Barfield. Yeah. He sucks. He's hitting 212. He's just struck out 200 times. I didn't say that, but I'm thinking it. I need to meet Mattingly, right? He's like, all right, listen, it was a weak night. He goes, the one thing about Donnie, he's great, but he's very particular with his back regimen and his pregame routine. He really doesn't meet fans during the week. He'll do it a little bit on the weekend.
Right.
I'm like, come on, man. I don't know his name. Zillow does it now. Yeah. Forget his name. Please, Papio. I play first base. Everything I'm throwing at him.
I'm not surprised by you, you know.
Push it.
Yeah.
Well, it worked. So, before I got to meet Mattingly, and this really jumped out to me. He's coming up the dugout steps, and the Yankees were a goofball, motley crew at this point. And they're like half stretching, uniforms, like they looked like slobs. Like they didn't even care if they were there. Soon as Mattingly came up those dugout steps and walked in front of the grass in front of the dugout, like there were 10 or 12 guys, they all snapped into attention. It was like, the captain is here. Even though we stink, we got to show respect. It was really eye-opening how that happened. And then I finally got to meet him, and I got a baseball. And then, of course, now I'm showing him my stance. Of course, I'm taking it overboard. Yeah. You know your partner. And he was the best. I remember shaking his hand. Yeah. And being so taken back how his grip and his forearms.
Yeah.
Because they didn't look particularly, you know, yoked on TV. But Donnie in person, like his thighs, his forearms, his neck, pretty stacked.
And he was good to you?
He was amazing.
That's awesome.
The best.
See, I love that.
Yep.
And that's why you want to meet your heroes.
That's right.
And you know, most times it's going to be fun.
So how did you feel when you met me? Get to meet your hero.
We could do this the easy way or the hard way.
Oh, God, that is.
BT and Sal, the fan. We'll come back. More of your calls on the other side, whether it is the Mets, whether it's Aaron Rodgers. Of course, that's been the theme of the day. And in case you missed anything, check it out on the free Odyssey app. We'll also work in some Giants next hour as we get set to hand it over to Evan and Tiki live from Giants camp as well. So we have plenty to do before we say goodbye this final hour.
It's the most anticipated WNBA season in history.
And you know what that means.
Court is back in session.
Welcome to Queens of the Court, an Odyssey original podcast.
I'm your girl, Cheryl Swoops.
And I'm Jordan Robinson. All WNBA season long, we'll be bringing you interviews with star athletes, analysis on your favorite teams,
and lots of hot takes.
Order in the court.
Follow and listen to Queens of the Court on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.